Welcome to Voices of the Community. I am your host, Eric Estrada. This episode is part one of a highlight compilation from season two of our special series, Where Arts Meets Impact, and our co-production with California for the Arts, featuring interviews with summit presenters from their 2024 California Arts and Culture Summit. Join our host, George Koster, and our summit roaming reporter, Eduardo Robles, as we highlight the voices of panelists and discussions that happened during the summit, which focus on how artwork is real work and rebuilding our communities through the arts. Our first voice is Julie Baker, CEO of California for the Arts.
Good morning, Sacramento, California Arts and Culture Summit. How we doing? Are we feeling good? Excellent. With the support of our members, thank you for the members. Shout out if you're a member. And to our partners, thanks to all the partners we work with, we work to fortify and empower the cultural sector and end the era of the starving artist. Yes? In the last 5 years, we have seen historic legislation and unprecedented funding for the arts, culture and creative industries, and workforce here in California. You all made that happen. So give yourselves a round of applause. We have seen a narrative shift in the perception of careers in the arts as legitimate work. Artwork is real work. Can I hear you say it? I'm going to say it. Artwork is
real work.
Artwork is
real work.
And I have to give a shout out to Kristen Dolan from the California Desert Arts Council. Are you here, Kristen? Because Kristen is the one who coined that, and then the Office of California, Office of Small Business Advocate, Tara Lynn Gray, who was with us last year, wrote a blog post about artwork is real work, right? So that's what's happening. We're infiltrating. So it's legitimate work, and the creative industries as critical to California's economy. This is the narrative shift that you are all engaged in, and the essential role artists play in responding to civic issues and infrastructural innovation.
Our next voice is Nataki Garrett, co-artistic director of One Nation, One Project.
In big cities and rural counties, hundreds of artists will create new works. From Rhinelander, Wisconsin, to Utica, Mississippi, Honolulu, to Oakland, to Providence, Rhode Island, it will be a national artistic outpouring of local reflection and joy, with so many sites piloting cross-sector partnerships amongst local artists, healthcare providers, and municipal leaders to bring health and well-being to the larger community. We endeavor to create a bold, new awareness of the impact that having greater access to arts and artistic practice can have on our physical and mental health. And my personal hope is that these partnerships and the research gleaned from our work will lead to more collaborations, increased investment in local artists by centering them as a necessary part of creating greater health and well-being in communities nationwide, centering their work as essential. And what's more, it's a model that can be replicated across sectors, across states, over and over until we get it right. We're in Phillips County, Arkansas. We're in the Bronx. We're here in California, in Oakland, across the country and around every community and neighborhood. We're doing the work because artwork is the real work. I trust artists throughout history and into the present because they have their ears to the ground and their hands on the pulse of humanity. Artists provide their hearts to help us deepen our empathy and their minds to broaden our horizons to what's necessary and possible to make a brighter and more equitable future. And to support that future, I maintain that instead of being extractive, our world must be transformed to include intentional ways for artists to thrive. We must be intentional about the artist, about how we train them to make art, how the art they create, the resources they need, where that money comes from, the access and disability support that is required for them to be successful, the audience that is being invited, and consciousness about the future projects that they are birthing. From museum curators to the performing arts makers to craft artisans and community choirs, the entire support system that surrounds the art and the artist must be intentional, with everybody pointed towards the same goal, because it is the real work. Artists are thought leaders and change makers who transform culture, reflecting our current humanity back to ourselves. We must endeavor to shift the national psyche so that artists are neither at the bottom or the top of the hierarchy, but at the heart.
Coming up next is Chris Appleton, founder and CEO of Arts Pharmacy.
Hi, I'm Eduardo Robles with Californians for the Arts and Voices of the Community, here with Chris Appleton at the California Arts and Culture Summit. Just got out of the Arts and Health panel, and we have Chris Appleton here for some insightful points of view on the panel he just came out of. And just a little question. I just saw a post right now about librarians being labeled kind of like caregivers, or kind of that there's space and they're healers. And then I saw another librarian kind of like step in and say that they're not professionally kind of trained to be healers. And how about artists? Where do you see kind of like this credentialing of art workers as kind of healthcare workers? How do we legitimize them in, you know, in systems, funding structures, in the healthcare system?
So there are a couple of ways to think about that. So one, certainly say that artists have been healers since the beginning of humankind. There's nothing new about the idea that artists are helping to improve people's health and well-being, as well as prevent disease. There's nothing new about that. The science is very clear. And again, artists have been doing this forever. I think there's, you know, maybe two ways to get to your question about the credentialing or certification of artists and cultural workers as healthcare workers. You know, on one end of the spectrum, you have sort of population health or public health programs where people, the public simply gets access to the arts and culture resources in their community through a health plan, an insurance company, through a health system, through a public health program. That's one end of the spectrum where we're not asking our theaters and community dance studios and art centers and museums necessarily to do anything differently than they're already doing. And that's important. They're already doing this work, right? And artists can keep doing that work. And whether we call artists healthcare workers or not, they're healthcare workers, right? The other end of the spectrum is that patients or individuals are referred to very specific arts and culture activities or resources where the provider of that resource has been trained, certified. They go through quality, you know, quality protocols to make sure that they remain up to date in their trainings and certifications. And so it's not an either or, it's certainly a both. And in order to advance both of those goals, that artists are truly recognized by the U.S. healthcare system as healers through certifications and credentials, as well as for cultural organizations to be embraced by the healthcare system, we need to continue to invest in demonstrating the evidence and outcomes that moves the needle for our healthcare partners.
Thank you so much, Chris. These are great, you know, ideas that, you know, we're going to share with, you know, our arts advocates out in, you know, California. And thank you so much.
Our next voice is Dr. Indra Viscontis, cognitive neuroscientist, scientist communicator, and opera singer and stage director.
Can I just make one comment too? So one of the things has come out of the Society for the Neuroscience of Creativity was that, you know, a few years ago we had our annual meeting and we had an NSF grant to bring in some educators to come and see, because we're like, look, we're doing all this great work in the lab about how to foster creativity. We want to get it out to the teachers so they can utilize it in the classroom. And, you know, we had a great time, lots of great conversations. And then at the happy hour, one of the educators came to us and said, look, this is all really great, but it's never going to happen. And we were just like, why? And he was like, because my parents and my community wants their kids to go to college. And until creativity is a prerequisite to get into college, we're not going to have the time or the funding to emphasize it the way we are all the other things that lead to better scores on the SAT. So you know what we did? We started working with college application essays, and we have a major project now across 8 different institutions, 42,000 college essays that we have run through our expert raters and a number of large language models to score them for their creativity. And it turns out that these creativity scores are almost as predictive of future GPA as the SAT, and they're 15 times less discriminatory than the SAT. And it gets better. This year, one major Ivy League university is actually using this tool now in their current admissions cycle. So now we can go back to the teachers and say, you know what? Actually, creativity is going to get your kids into college. We've solved that problem for you. Now put the music programs, put the creativity programs back into high school, because you can tell the parents solidly that that's what's going to get their kids into college.
Fantastic.
Coming up next is Dr. Tasha Golden, Director of Research for the International Arts Mind Lab at Johns Hopkins University.
Hi, my name is Eduardo Robles with Californians for the Arts and Voices of the Community here at the second annual California Arts and Culture Summit. We just got out of the Arts and Health panel, and I have one of our panelists, Dr. Tasha Golden. Hi, Tasha.
Hi, good to be here.
How are you doing? We just wanted to, you know, just kind of get some key takeaways from the panel you just were a part of. And, you know, before you kind of go into some takeaways from the panelists, really wanted you to kind of elaborate more on this vision of kind of redefining health in society. That was very powerful when you mentioned, you know, the possibilities with all of these projects, you know, that are being kind of advanced and kind of like a key moment in terms of how art is being utilized in government. So I dream.
Yeah.
Dream in how you're thinking about.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of times people think about arts and health and they think about combining sectors, like we're going to combine the arts sector with the health sector. And that is obviously a really great place to start. That's where we have to start now, because those are the sectors that exist. But the larger way to think about it is to redefine health itself. So I mentioned on the panel that the World Health Organization defines health as complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. And if we actually carried that definition through, we would have to make sure that we're able to supply people with opportunities to be well. And it turns out, I get to ask people all over the world, like, what is well-being? And the answers are really diverse, but they cohere around a number of like things, like having meaning, having purpose, being connected with people, having supports when you need it, when things go wrong, being able to pursue curiosities, having like a meaningful occupation of your time, a sense of contributing to something larger than yourself, being able to experience beauty and creativity. These are the kind of things that people say that well-being is. So if we decided as a culture, as a society, to embrace the actual definition of health, like the real one that the WHO established in 1946, then we would have to think about how are we set up, whether we continue to call that our healthcare system or whether we just call it our communities and our society. We would have to set up a way for people to find that meaning, to find that purpose, to connect with other people, to pursue things that are meaningful to them. All of those things that I just mentioned as far as definitions of well-being, we would have to figure out how to supply those. And those things, as it turns out, fall under the umbrella not of healthcare, but of arts and culture. And so the reason that definition matters for me is that instead of thinking about how do we, you know, convince the healthcare sector that they need the arts or like tie these two sectors together, it's more like, how do we redefine what health is so that it becomes incredibly apparent intuitively that these aspects of our community are aspects of our ability to thrive, and that thriving is an essential part of being healthy. It's not just a nice to have.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking us on that, you know, envisioning. Thank you so much, Tasha, for taking the time to speak with us.
We're halfway through our powerful conversation at the 2024 California Arts and Culture Summit. You've heard from the voices of Julie Baker, CEO of California for the Arts, Nataki Garrett, co-artistic director for One Nation, One Project, Chris Appleton, founder and CEO of Arts Pharmacy, Indre Viscontis, cognitive neuroscientist, science communicator, and opera singer and stage director, and Dr. Tasha Golden, Director of Research for the International Arts and Mind Lab at Johns Hopkins University. Thank you to our incredible sponsors and donors like you for supporting Voices of the Community. Stay with us, more highlights ahead. Voices of the Community is made possible by generous support from the Zellerbach Family Foundation, dedicated to ensuring vibrant work is created, new voices are celebrated, and diverse communities have opportunities to thrive. Learn more at zff.org. Voices of the Community is also supported by the Peaceful World Foundation, fostering a culture of global peace through hosted conversation and education. Discover more at peacefulworldfoundation.org. Welcome back to Voices of the Community, where today's conversation at the 2024 California Arts and Culture Summit focuses on how artwork is real work and rebuilding communities through the arts. Coming up next are the voices of Tamara Misty Sandifer, CEO and founder of Studio T Arts and Entertainment, and Nico Kimson, artist and founder of Kimson Creative Arts and Equity Consulting Group. Let's continue the discussion.
Okay, so I have a question.
Let's go, baby. Okay.
Yes.
Okay,
so we heard wealth distribution. We heard infrastructure in order to do stuff. We heard language. Now, what I'm seeing is you've got all this money, you've got all these nonprofits, you've got all these art, and so you've got money flowing to nonprofits, and you've got artists, you've got money flowing to nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
In an idea of redistribution, what would you think about training up like small groups of artists who have like interest to become nonprofits?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
How would that be a structure that can function in this money book?
Or... yes, and. Yes, and. I will offer, yes, and. Yeah, I have a nonprofit, but I also have a for-profit.
Ding, ding, ding. Ding, ding, ding.
Because what I didn't want my mentees, the people that I'm grooming in the things of economics, to think that they could only survive if they got a grant. So yes, and. Yes, and. How about just business? How about entrepreneurship? How about arts plus entrepreneurship?
Mm-hmm.
Arts plus business models. Mm-hmm. Arts plus entrepreneurship, business model, and do it here for as long as you need to. Grow.
Owner, sir.
Yeah, I think it's one of those there's a buffet and the 501c3 nonprofit is one of them that I think it's just a tax status, but it's not a mindset, right? I make this year, Kimson Creative will have been in business for 3 years. We'll have moved over $1 million directly to artists, right?
Okay. That's a clap.
Tell me about, right. I'm an LLC. I am not a 501c3 nonprofit, right? I think people from our shared experiences, I have been used, abused, silenced within the nonprofit industrial complex, and I no longer.
Yes.
I'm going to get mine, and my community is going to get
there
theirs through my LLC.
There you go. So then, yes. Then I have a question for you, sweetie, just because, number one, I love your bravery. Though brave people change the world. So my question for you is, do you have a nonprofit?
I hope. Organizations start nonprofits because they didn't know how to.
Okay, is there anybody in this room who needs help starting or building their nonprofit? Raise your hand. You have a mentor.
Sign her up.
And that's how economic justice in community works.
In real time.
Live demonstration.
In real time.
And just so you know, we've been best friends for 20 years. We planned this whole thing. Just kidding.
Just kidding.
Just kidding. I'm just kidding. But I do want to know your name. Shout it, Mama.
Margaret.
Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret.
Y'all are Margaret.
Coming up next is Jamie Hand, Director of Strategic Impact and Narrative Change at Creatives Rebuild New York.
This is George Koster with Voices of the Community and Californians for the Arts at the second annual Arts and Culture Summit here in Sacramento. And I have the pleasure of talking with Jamie Hand, the Director of Strategic Impact and Narrative Change at Creatives Rebuild New York. So Jamie, my first question would be, I think for the audience, it would be helpful. People call it universal basic income, guaranteeing income. It literally goes all the way back to the people's, you know, it's MLK back in 62. So share a little bit more about kind of the background. Was there, you know, every jurisdiction likes to do a study about another study so that we can study it and then report it. So how did the city come to a place where they wanted to do guaranteed income? Was there some kind of a study first done? Or did people jump in on, you know, Michael Tubbs and the whole activity of Michael Tubbs in Stockton, basically showing, hey, people spend the money to stay alive and get work and, you know, stabilize?
So one first distinction is it's across the state of New York.
So 2,400 artists, not just the city of New York, okay. but the state of New York. And the data and the research is there. So we were launched in 2021. And so already the programs in Stockton, as you mentioned, and elsewhere, you know, the broader guaranteed income movement and basic income movement, the explosion of programs and pilots that happened under the ARPA funding from, you know, during the pandemic was a sort of an important baseline for us. We decided explicitly not to make ours a pilot. We weren't doing it for research purposes. We believed that people know best how to spend the money. You know, because we're a private sector, because we're a private philanthropy, we're not public dollars. There's some complexities that come with sort of giving money directly to individuals. But it's permittable through the IRS, but folks had to show that they were below a certain income level, basically. And so we used something called the self-sufficiency standard and people had to sort of verify and show some of their income levels and things like that in order to be eligible. But there was no, you know, for us, it wasn't about, we really were operating kind of from the ideas behind trust-based philanthropy, trusting people to know what they need, to share what they could share in their application. It was a very simple application. Something that I mentioned on stage in the panel was that we tried very hard to center sort of care throughout the process. These are people that are living in dire circumstances. We have statistics from our application data and from our survey data that I think over 60, I think it's 60% of artists are living, are making less than $25,000 a year in New York State. At or below poverty level, right? And so when you're supporting folks through an application process, when you're helping them understand whether getting this money will shift their public benefits, right? Some of these folks are on public benefits. That involves a lot of care, and that involves a lot of what we talk about as social service work, right? And arts administrators aren't often trained or, you know, have the skills to do that. So we had a lot of really important partners in the implementation of that program. And I think I'm veering away from your original question, but we didn't feel like we needed to prove anything. It was, you know, in some ways when the Mellon Foundation under Elizabeth Alexander's leadership said, you know, this is something that we're going to do for artists. Artists are an important part of the New York State economy. It was, you know, we were set up maybe as demonstration projects. Like, is this a good way to support artists? And so, again, we have the guaranteed income program. In addition to that, we also have an artist employment program. So two different, very different, and sometimes intention methods of supporting artists. And we are doing a lot of research on our programs, right? They weren't done to prove anything, but we do want to know. And so we have two different evaluations happening within the guaranteed income program and two different evaluations happening within the artist employment program that will come out later this year with some information about sort of the models and not just how they use the money, but like what are the ways that artists' practices have changed, their overall well-being, things like that.
Well, Jamie, thank you so much for being on Voices of the Community and Californians for the Arts here at the Summit and taking time away from the Summit to share your wonderful insights.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. And good luck with the program.
Up next are Nurit Siegel-Smith, Executive Director for Music Forward Foundation and Board Member of California for the Arts and California Arts Advocates, and Marcus Mitchell, Public Administrator for the City of West Hollywood's Arts.
I love it. Having our artists have their voice heard is amazing. And I think that one of the things that I also heard here is making sure that in training, in education, in community, we are teaching artists how to monetize. What are all the different ways, the new ways, the old ways? What are the ways that artists from all different fields can learn how to monetize?
Can I add one more?
Please.
And just because the artists in the room here, I'm sorry, my stuff is super basic. This is so basic, but it's also, it's something I need to know and teach myself, but ask for help. Like I said, all these things need to be in place. If you're an artist or creative, be an artist or creative. You should learn how to create a budget or respond to certain things, but you're not supposed to become an accountant. So in all this, I think this entrepreneurship is cool, but I think you've kind of got a culture of this super hyped up, like mega entrepreneur where you're like some robot brain person who does everything. And like, what is that? So like, but to go back to my point though, like, no, don't become an amazing accountant. But if you don't know how to do a budget, you probably know someone who does, regardless of your background. Our communities are amazing and full of really amazing people with incredible skills. If you have a weakness, find somebody who can help you out. Know your weaknesses. And because that's how these corporations and people on top who project that they know it all are actually doing it. They have a team of like 100 people doing all the little things for them. And they just, I've seen this even with artist studios. When you look at artists and you're like, whoa, how did they get there? They've got like 50 people working for them. So you, in your situation, working all alone, are not going to be able to generate a corporate level package, but understand what you're missing and what you need. And to the extent that you can, don't be afraid to ask for help. And to go off of what Julie said, you'd be surprised. Like, people want to help you. People want to support you. And if you come to them with something that they can actually give, that's a win. Like, I'm not going to be able to give everything, but if you're asking me something that I have to give, whether it's time or skill or an ability, you may be surprised how people show up. So don't think it's your job to be, I don't even know the names of all these guys on the covers of like Fast Company and stuff, but don't try to be like that. That's not why we value you. Do you, but just know what you need to succeed and look for that support, because that's what the people who are successful, that's what they're doing.
Love that. No, and something that came up in conversation previously is these great collaboratives of artists that have been popping up and these communities of artists that are relying on each other, pulling on each other's strengths and skills together. And I think that we've talked at length about those, the partnerships and collaboration today already. I think there's some really great tactical things that this panel has shared with everybody. The thing that I am taking away from already this day and from what was just shared is how important this network is to all of us and to the artists and the creative economy. So keep talking, keep sharing, keep growing together. My name is Nurit. Thank you to California for the Arts for this amazing summit. And thank you all for being here. Thank you, panelists.
Thank you.
That concludes part one of our highlight episodes of season two of Where Arts Meets Impact in partnership with California for the Arts. A special thanks to our guests, Julie Baker, Nataki Garrett, Chris Appleton, Dr. Indra Viscontes, Dr. Tasha Golden, Tamara Miss T. Sandifer, Nico Kimson, Jamie Hand, Nurit Siegel-Smith, and Marcus Mitchell for their insights on arts advocacy. Visit voicesofthecommunity.com and go to season two of Where Arts Meets Impact to explore more about our guests and see their work. While you're on our website, we invite you to visit our archive of past shows. Stay tuned for part two of our highlight compilation from our season two Arts and Culture series, and stay tuned for our next series, Making the Invisible Visible, as we amplify the voices of our unhoused neighbors and the people and organizations that support them.
Today's episode was made possible through our co-production partnership with California for the Arts at their annual California Arts and Culture Summit. Special thanks to our technical crew, audio and video wizard Eric Estrada, and our co-production partner, Bayvac Media, and their wonderful team, Paula Argoni, Andy Konami, Siobhan Giles, and Clay Goh. Thanks to Casey Nance from Citron Studios for the graphics magic. A special thanks to our broadcast partners who helped share these important conversations, KSFP LPFM in San Francisco, KPCA LPFM in Petaluma, Petaluma Community Public Access TV, Bayvac Media's SF Commons, and PEG Media's Public Access TV Exchange. Thank you for your commitment to amplifying diverse voices and perspectives. Please support these partners and our mission by tuning in and spreading the word. Voices of the Community is made possible by generous support from the Zellerbach Family Foundation, dedicated to ensuring vibrant work is created, new voices celebrated, and diverse communities have opportunities to thrive. Learn more at zff.org. Voices of the Community is also supported by the Peaceful World Foundation, fostering a culture of global peace through hosted conversations and education. Discover more at peacefulworldfoundation.org. And we'd love your support to continue to make shows just like this one. Go to voicesofthecommunity.com and click on the donate button to help us continue to bring you unique voices from our community. Take Voices of the Community with you on the go. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Enjoying the show? Please rate and review us on your favorite app. It helps more people discover these important stories. Go to youtube.com/@GeoCoster to watch or listen to all of our past and future episodes. And you can always go to voicesofthecommunity.com and listen and watch our 5 series and from our archives. Have feedback or ideas for shows? We'd love to hear from you. Email george@georgecoster.com. I'm George Coster from San Francisco. On behalf of our team, thank you for joining us. Until next time, remember, your voice matters.